House Committee on Judiciary Full Committee Hearing, Friday, April 12, 1991, 1 p.m., Hearing Room 357, Work Session.
I'd like to call the full House Judiciary Committee to order today on the schedule. We have a work session scheduled on House Bill 2388, 3438, Senate Bill 426, Senate Bill 572, House Bill 2186, 2193, 3521, 3524, 2382, Senate Bills 214 and 216, and House Bill 3005.
Is that all?
That's all. We have...
Wait till next week.
We have slowed down a bit. We'll try to do better. Yes, that's right, next Friday. Before we get into the work session on these bills, we have... with us, John Latimer and others are on their way, I guess, from Legislative Fiscal Office, and we've had some discussion in this committee and on the floor about the statements we get, the timing thereof. I would tell you that I learned just this morning a little bit better about some of the problems with respect to the timing, and frankly, after learning a bit more about process, it's very helpful to the chair, I will tell you, and I think the information will be helpful to the members in resolving difficulties we've had, and information's a wonderful thing to possess, and sometimes maybe some of the statements haven't been made with all of the information that would have been helpful. So, Mr. Latimer, if you'd like to come and just kind of address us briefly, there may be some questions. I expect there will be. Welcome and thank you for coming up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Latimer, the Legislative Fiscal Officer, and I'd like to very quickly talk long enough to get the technical staff here to give you the real story. But what I'd like to do is give you a little introduction to the process we use for the fiscal impact statements, and then talk to you a little bit about what Holly and I discovered were some miscommunications on, I think, both of our parts. And I think we've cleared that up. Holly's passing something out that I hope will help. We started this year with a new fiscal impact process. It became clear to us, particularly during the last session, that although we had the statutory responsibility for doing the fiscal impact statements, I'm sorry, we had a plan to go on after you did your bill, so that's why they're late. I'd like to introduce to you, before I go into the discussion of the process, Kay Hutchison, who's one of our senior budget analysts, who is also responsible for supervising the fiscal impact process. And also then, this is, I think most of you know Kay, and this is Robin Lamont. Robin comes with to us, and she does most of the writing of the fiscal impact statements in the criminal justice area. Robin comes to us with many years of experience in the courts, both as a budget analyst and manager. And, well, she's done a variety of tasks within the court system, so she knows the court system quite well. Anyway, as I was saying, we came to the conclusion that letting the executive branch write the fiscal impact statements and then having our staff essentially review them and pass them on was not working very well. The last session of the legislature gave us the task then of moving the fiscal impact process from exec over to Legislative Fiscal. And in the process, we obtained funds for three fiscal analysts who are essentially the workhorses of the process. They do the writing in conjunction with our budget analysts, and Robin is one of those three. All of those people came to us with many years of experience in a variety of positions in government, mostly fiscal, and they know how to put together the costs of particular programs. what has happened since then, because we're now going through this new process, we're probably doing the fiscal impact statements somewhat different than we did four sessions in the past, which means you may find, for example, that one bill that was analyzed one way last time by the executive department, we will be analyzing it quite different now that we have the people to spend the time on it. But in short, when the bills are introduced, the bills come to our budget analysts who decide quickly whether they think it's fiscal or not. Those bills are then made, there's a list made of which agencies they affect. Those agencies are then contacted by our staff to see what their input might be on the cost of that particular piece of legislation. That information comes to our analysts, fiscal note analysts, and they process that with their own research and knowledge and then put out the fiscal impact note for you. What I thought I'd like to do, that's a real short synopsis of what we do, and it certainly doesn't go into the many details of how we go about preparing a fiscal impact note, and I'd be glad to have Kay and Robin answer questions about that. Before we answer questions, though, I'd like to refer to the memo that I've sent Holly. We understand some of the concerns about our assumptions in writing the fiscal impact statements. We would like to clarify those assumptions in the impact statement. We also understand that someone on this committee or on the staff was told that we would not prepare fiscal impact statements from subcommittee to full committee of judiciary, and that is just, it's just wrong. I mean, I don't know who told them that, but they were wrong in doing so. Unfortunately, it's just come to my attention. We will, with a amendment from council, we will prepare a fiscal impact statement on that amendment as it goes from subcommittee to full committee. And so you should not be receiving those surprises at full committee or on the floor. Unfortunately, it's taken till now to find that out. And I apologize for that to the committee, but we hope to clear that up. And I hope the memo that we've sent Holly may help also. So with that, if I can, I'd be glad to try and answer questions.
Appreciate that. Questions? Representative Bell.
I have a question, and I'm not sure how to word it, but it seems like some of them are based on the worst-case scenario. Is that kind of the rule of thumb that you go by, or do you take an approximation of middle of the road, or what, especially on, you know, the ones that are going to possibly impact the courts? And the
I guess the best answer to that is probably that it depends, but in most cases we have to look at what is the optimal cost of a particular piece of legislation, what could happen. We're responsible under the rules and the law to talk about the potential costs of pieces of legislation, and consequently the potential quite often is, as you put it, a worst-case scenario.
Is, Mr. Chairman, follow-up question.
Please.
Is there any way, though, to get some kind of a prediction from the agency involved as to how often they would pick up this type of case or how frequently they think this would happen based on maybe past arrests or past?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bell, we do that. In fact, when we are analyzing the legislation and doing our fiscal impact statement, we do, in fact, go to the agencies, and not just perhaps the particular agency, but we do work with DAs and others involved in the process to find out how they feel that legislation affects their jobs.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Is it possible in some circumstances to put down two elements in the fiscal impact statement? One is the probable effects of the legislation. Another is the possible effects. And maybe that's asking too much. Now, taking a step back, I realize an agency can load the dice, or anyone who provides you with information can load the dice by saying, if this passes, we will have to add 3 employees to our staff. You really don't have a chance. I guess my first question is, you really don't have an opportunity to go back and question that unless there's some independent information provided to you that says that's not likely?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, we do, in fact, question that, and we try to get information from multiple sources. so that we don't have to rely solely on one particular agency. As you can imagine, as legislation goes fairly quickly, there are times that you don't have a week or 2 weeks to do thorough research. But that's why we have the budget analysts who handle that particular agency involved in the fiscal note process, because they are looking at the budget and analyzing the budget of that agency. They know that agency's operations. They not only work with our fiscal note analysts, such as Robin, but they will supervise and review the actual fiscal note itself and the information that comes from the agency.
But then obviously you're aware, too, that the agencies sometimes may use fiscal impact statements as leverage in the budget process by saying, my God, look what's happening in these bills that are going through the system. That's why we need more staff, et cetera, et cetera. I'm seeing some nodding there. So.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's exactly the case. We try to balance those competing interests on a particular piece of legislation.
What about the idea of sometimes rating something as probable as opposed to possible? Maybe that should only be done in rare circumstances. I'd throw it out as a suggestion, maybe, because there are these extreme case scenarios, and they are possible. But the more probable result is perhaps not so extreme.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, I think rather than doing the probable versus possible, we would rather set out the assumptions that are underlying what are the causes of a particular bill having a fiscal impact. And we're trying to get to that with this memo that you have before you. We will put in almost as boilerplate, depending on the legislation, that kind of a paragraph that describes if then. Thank these you. Kinds of things may happen.
I would, on top of that, I think we had one on the floor a couple days back, and I think the concluding paragraph was language that started out, it appears that this could, and it was, and then resolved something that I think a lot of us didn't have much faith in. And I guess when you start out in such a iffy, tenuous way and then conclude something that we don't want concluded, it poured a little salt on some wounds. I would ask, in terms of the probable and possible, for instance, we had a bill in here that dealt with recriminalization of small amounts of marijuana. The impact statement suggested that 50% of those cases would go to trial, costing the court system $400,000. I believe the administrator of the state court system suggested that maybe 10% of those matters would proceed to trial, which would be about a $50,000 impact, if my figures are, I think, correct. I guess I wonder why given the information provided by the state court administrator was a figure of like 50% used rather than seemingly the more credible 10% or even lower.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with that particular piece of legislation. I don't analyze these bills, but perhaps I should let Robin talk to that specific issue. But generally, we work very closely with the Judicial Department, the Sentencing the Criminal Justice Council and others, and DAs who deal with these, we get information from the Judicial Department whether, in fact, he changed his mind or we didn't agree with it. I don't know, and perhaps Robin.
I can't remember the precise.
Well, I can clarify that.
Information on that.
What happened was that he sent you information, and then someone just maybe made a mistake or transposed it. That had a paragraph in there that said, or a sentence that said, 50% of these cases go to trial. Well, you burglars, only 9 out of 10 of those go to trial. So the experience with the members of the committee that try criminal cases is, and the state court administrator office is, well, if that's a basis for your report, then take it and divide it by 5, and you might come up with reality here. But it didn't affect the numbers. It just that the reasoning that you used all of a sudden added something to it that made the numbers look real shaky. And it may have been the exact same number that he sent over. But by the time it went through your process, we end up with having a fiscal impact statement that we couldn't have defended either way on the House floor.
Further questions? Representative Bell?
Well, I have a real concern about the fact that whomever you go to get the information really could kill a bill if they didn't like it, because you can justify anything on paper, or not justify it, as the case may be. And I'm wondering if, when we hear testimony, usually a person who sponsors the bill has already been in touch with somebody in the kind of agency that that would involve, and they're usually for it, and so they testify to us in a different spectrum, and we pass the bill through under that light. Perhaps some of those people who testify, we should put their names with the bill when it comes to you, so in your referring back to get information, maybe if they are involved in an agency, you would call the people who are originally involved in the preparation of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bell, we would welcome that. It is our hope, and I know that you probably, many of you don't, have not experienced this, but it is our hope that we are here to help the committee. what we have to do is take a lot of competing information from a variety of people who have one point of view or another on a particular piece of legislation, work through that with the best we can, knowing who we rely on and how we rely on it, and particularly Robin's experience in the court process, and try to come to some reasonable a fiscal impact statement. Holly and I had a very good discussion this morning, and I think it's going to clear up a lot of things. One of the things that we need to do is have much closer communication between your staff and our staff, so that we know that when you get into a subcommittee of your committee and there are a lot of problems with various people saying different things about the fiscal impact, that's communicated to us so that before it goes to full, we try to rectify those differences if we can. And I think Holly understands that now, and I know our staff does, because we all sat around and talked about it. And we would like to help you with that if we can. Mr. Chairman, Representative Bell, we will not obviously have time if there's a lot of conflicting testimony, if we're on a short timeline, to maybe sift out it all, but certainly we can try to help you understand very clearly the assumptions we were making in doing the fiscal impact statement.
I'm just going to say that it seems more our experience that we don't get conflicting stories. We just get one story here in the hearing, which mm-hmm. we base our vote on. And frankly, you know, if you're talking to a rural police officer or a metropolitan police officer, they have a whole different approach to a lot of things, not just finances. And so we base our vote on what we hear in committee, and so we may not.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bell, what we try to do is take a statewide perspective when we do the fiscal impact statement. That's clearly our goal. And we also, I know that one of the concerns that I heard was that in some cases we were giving a bigger caseload for indigent defense on bills than, say, the Criminal Justice Council. But they were using convictions, and we're using cases. And we need to use cases, because convictions aren't what you base a cost of indigent defense on. So we need to try and keep those kinds of things in mind, and also that we will talk to people across the state to try and get a balance of both rural and urban differences.
Chair.
Representative Bauman.
I wondered, there's a very strong feeling on the committee, a kind of reluctance to send bills with fiscal impact to Ways and Means because of concern that Ways and Means will look at the politics maybe, or I mean, they'll look at the policy differently and use the cost as justification. And this committee is really accustomed to making lots of policy. So I'm curious whether members of Ways and Means Committee have ever challenged the assumptions of your fiscal impact statements along any of the grounds that members of this committee are challenging them on. In other words, do members of Ways and Means ever broach with you the possibility that an agency has a self-interest in giving you the information they've given you and ask you to independently examine that information. Is that something that comes up from members of the Ways and Means Committee? Are we the first?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bowman, it comes up all the time. We are challenged by our own members and put to the test of backing up both our assumptions and our recommendations. And we don't win them all, believe you me. But I think the answer to the question you ask is, yes, we are challenged by members of Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm. With the members, Mr. Chair? Members of members of Ways and Means then would ask questions whose sophistication might approach that of the Judiciary Committee?
Always.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm in trouble no matter how I answer that question.
Sorry, I don't need an answer. I did have one other area that I wanted to approach with you, and that is I questioned a fiscal impact statement which stated, I think, $45,000 cost of a fingerprinting program. The state police had testified in committee that there would be a $45,000 cost to this program, but that they were willing to kind of bunch together their other assignments and make that $45,000 fingerprint program fit without causing any fiscal impact. Your report came back and said there is a fiscal impact of $45,000. And as a note, you added, the state police have suggested that they would, move other programs in order to fit this in to their existing budget. Could you just address why it is that you left a $45,000 fiscal impact in your statement when the state police came in and said to us that they'd do this for free?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bowman, first of all, they couldn't do it for free. They would have to take dollars that they spend on some other function to do that. Second of all, the law and the House rules require us to talk about the cost of a particular bill. But when, as in this fiscal note, we find that a agency says that they can absorb that cost, then we note that. But it still does have a cost, so it has a fiscal impact.
Follow that up just from my own understanding, because we get a lot of testimony from particular agencies that have a lot of interest in judiciary policy, and this was a policy area that was of great interest to the state police. They have a budget that has, I guess, line items that are within their discretion, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Is there some reason why Ways and Means would have any interest in examining the priorities that the state police make within their own budget in terms of line item priority?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bowman, the Ways and Means Committee does that with every budget. I think the Ways and Means Committee sees it as their function to look at the priorities of the agencies and see if they fit what is the current law, what the current law requires that agency to do, and whether or not they feel that they are spending those dollars properly and also in the most efficient and effective way they can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I appreciate that the job you've got to do on these fiscal impact statements is difficult for the reasons that are in the memo from Sue Acuff and Ron Lamont. There are a lot of unknowns out there, and you're in some senses you really are having to be an economist. You're having to project some things that are not easily definable. My question is, what do we have a process in place in this building to come back? You've got a fiscal impact statement in front of us that says Program A is going to cost $1 billion.
do we go ahead and pass Program A because it does good things for mom and apple pie. We send it down to Ways and Means, and we convince Ways and Means that it's worth doing. Ways and Means funds it for $1 jillion, or with the expectation, Ways and Means passes it with the expectation it's going to cost $1 jillion, but we'll make it work. Do we have a process in place in this building for coming back 2 years from now, looking at that same fiscal impact statement and say, geez, this only cost $500 million, or it cost $2 jillion, and what can we learn from that next time around when Brian's got another bill that does the same thing, only increases it to a Class A felony, and now we want to know is it going to be a $4 jillion bill? What did we learn from the prior fiscal impact statement? What's the process that we have for earmarking these things and coming back and looking at them 2 years later so that we can learn from this process?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I suppose the formal answer to your question is there is not a formal process to do that. But the real answer is that it is part of our ongoing budget analysis, both on the part of our staff and on the part of the Ways and Means Committee, as they look at the development of costs of programs within state agencies. So in a formal sense of taking a particular program and a particular fiscal impact and tracing it through time, there is no process for doing that. But
is that doable? If I had a pet project, a pet bill, and we had a fiscal impact statement, and we wanted to hang on to it and create a series of files, would we be able to call you back in 2 years and say, John, how do we do on these 6 fiscal impact statements and these 6 programs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, it would depend on the programs and the circumstances, but it certainly would be doable with sufficient resources. I think we do these kinds of things with interim task forces and studies. However, and I think we could do that if we were asked on a particular program or particular budget to do that, yes. But if we were asked to do that on every piece of legislation that passed, we wouldn't have the resources to do it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Clark, I just wanted to say we sit in here a lot of afternoons. I'm trying to remember which day it was, but we had a bill before us either yesterday or the day before, and there was a fiscal impact statement on it that was rather significant, and I said, my goodness, this doesn't seem to strike me as terribly attractive. We had the same concept 2 years ago. Do we have the fiscal from 2 years ago? And it was retrieved, and I think one of them, there was no determination, and the one that we had in front of us yesterday was several jillion.
Mr. Chair.
So and I realize part of that may be you changed your system and you've got different folks you're relying on. I'm just saying that we'd have to stay with one system in order to go back and analyze, I suspect, or at least it'd be easier. Representative.
Mr. Chair.
John, you wanted to
say real quick.
Kay wanted to comment.
Just real quick.
Oh,
just for the record, I don't think my goodness is exactly what you said.
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if
Kay,
we could, Kay
ahead.
Would like to sure. comment on that.
I was just going to comment, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark. I'm Kay Hutchison. I supervise the process. You weren't here when we were introduced.
Sorry for
that. I just wanted to say that it would be very difficult to track some of these bills, especially ones in your area. Cause and effect is very difficult to track. And I'm not sure, I think we do the best we can using resources, information resources today that are much better than they were when I started here about 14 years ago when we had hardly any court data at all. And we did not have a unified court system, which we really still don't have. But we're relying on much better sources of information today than even 2 to 4 years ago when you got indeterminate cost impacts. And I think what you're seeing is our efforts to be a little more thorough in doing it. And the consequence may be that we're putting numbers on things that we didn't put numbers on before.
And I appreciate that. Again, Mr. Chair, my interest is in coming back to that later and saying, how did we do? Was that accurate? Why wasn't it accurate? And because the issue, I mean, I've only been here 2 sessions, the issues are the same issues. indigent defense, prosecution, corrections, parole and probation. The issues come up again and again and again, and it seems to me we can be learning some things along the way.
Counsel, you have a question? Any other questions from the members?
Mr. Chairman, may I close?
Sure, please do.
I talked with the co-chairs. The only reason I'm saying this is because of one of Representative Bauman's questions about what happens to bills when they get to Ways and Means.
Great question.
I've only been here. This is only my second session, but I've led to believe that there is around here that Ways and Means is thought of as a dark hole. The Ways and Means co-chairs this time have made it very clear to me, and I agree with this, that we're going to have a very open process to the extent that it can be. They have said, and they've told me explicitly, that they will be more than happy to come before this committee and talk to you about what they intend to do with bills that are referred to the Ways and Means Committee. So I finish by offering you to have the co-chairs.